Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Maurice Root. Let's get into the news of the day. And the first thing we're going to be talking about is the country's ongoing debate about BEE. And I think an interesting development has happened. We've crossed a strange milestone, which is that Adrian Basson, who I believe is the editor-in-chief of News 24, has opened or has put himself into the debate and an interesting position, one that is, I think, at least slightly aligned to our position. His opinion piece is titled BEE, Ramaphosa Ignores the Elephant in the Room. And it begins with the following. Basson says, here is the question President Cyril Ramaphosa refuses to answer in his fervent defense of black economic empowerment. How much has BEE contributed to economic growth and how many jobs has it created? Now, the reason this is significant is that I would say Basson has been pretty friendly in general towards Ramaphosa. And has it been, I wouldn't say friendly, but sympathetic, I think, to the ANC in many ways. And the fact that he is kind of coming down in this debate on what I believe is the central question. BEE has not created jobs and not created economic growth. It has not reduced poverty. I think this is a very important sign that the debate is very clearly shifting against BEE. At the same time, we had a opinion piece in Business Day from the DA's head of policy, Matt Cuthbert, defending the DA's stance on BEE, saying that the DA had learned the lessons from its own history between 2014 and 2019 when, according to Cuthbert, the DA sought to fast-forward racial transformation in its ranks from people to policy. 6 years ago, we reasserted and resolved to recommit to non-racialism. I maintain that the DA made the right decision to ditch a populist-driven approach in favor of an evidence-based one. Marius, what do you make of the state of things? We obviously talk about this a lot, but it is one of the key policy disputes in South African history, and I think it's one that has been a long time coming. What's your thoughts on where things are at?
Yeah, I think use a phrase that the kids say, I think there's a bit of a vibe shift at the moment. I think a lot of people are coming around. I mean, the fact that somebody like Adrian Basson, who, as you say, has been quite friendly to the ANC and been quite reluctant to criticize them. I do think News 24 sometimes gets criticized unfairly. I do think they are actually a pretty good publication, but I'm not Adrian Basson himself. I think he's been, I really agree with him. And this time, I think I do. But this is also the question, though. I mean, there was a column in Business Live last week. I'm not sure if you spoke about it on the show. So by a guy called John Ludlow, who used to be editor of the Sowetan, and if you can believe it, is currently the CEO of the Small Business Initiative. And the headline of this column is, let's talk about strengthening BEE. And he's got a very telling line here. He says, because now he talks about how people are criticizing BEE. Much of the criticism is misplaced and misinformed. For example, BEE cannot be blamed for SA's worsening poverty, inequality, and joblessness. Resolving these issues was never its primary objective. Then he goes on to talk about how BEE's been very good because it's created some BEE millionaires. He talks about Ramaphosa, he talks about Patrice Motsepe, Saki Makazoma. And he says what's happened is these guys have used their personal wealth to start foundations, which has uplifted communities and so on. So that's also a thing. Is the point of BEE to lift ordinary people out of poverty and to create jobs and so on? Or is it to create this class of very rich people? Another telling thing in John Ludlow's article is that he calls these people like Motsepe and so on oligarchs, but not in a pejorative way, but in a positive way. And that's all very telling. Do we want to create a whole bunch of oligarchs? Having a country full of oligarchs is not a good thing. Ask the Russians, you know, like having a whole bunch of rich, powerful people running things is bad. You shouldn't, that's not what you should want. So that's also the question. Is the point of BEE to get rid of, like to decrease things like unemployment and poverty? For some people, it's actually not. It is just to create a small class, you know, maybe even less than 500 people, less than 100 people, of incredibly wealthy people who have become incredibly wealthy just because they are black.
No, exactly. There has been this sort of sleight of hand played where, on one hand, defenders of BEE will say, we need this policy because, you know, we've got such poverty and inequality and all these injustices of the past. But then you kind of confront them with the evidence of, okay, but has the policy actually worked? And then suddenly the goalposts shift and say, well, you know, this is more about some kind of grand racial spiritual upliftment project of creating millionaires so that, you know, black people can feel like they are included too, not in a literal sense, but in a sort of spiritual sense, which is, I think, rather cynical, because you realize that, unfortunately, quite often the people making those very specific arguments are the exact people who've benefited from some of these programs. And it's exactly why, when you actually go out and ask ordinary South Africans, you know, how do you feel about BEE, or do you, would you prefer BEE or, like, say, a voucher policy or something, as we've done in the past, or a job? And what do ordinary people say? They say, well, I mean, I've never gotten anything from BEE, so yeah, sure, I take the voucher, I take the job. That's much better.
But I think there's also a lot of, let's say, like, kind of sleight of hand. And black economic empowerment sounds nice, obviously, but it's only benefited very, like, a small handful of people. That's also, we need to, I think I also mentioned, we need to define what do things like transformation mean, or equality. President Ramaphosa was talking about, we need BEE until we've got equality. No country on earth will ever be equal. It's completely impossible. You can be equal under the law. That's how it should be. But you'll never have income equality. You'll never have equality of anything, because human beings are different. That's, I mean, it's a fact of life. The only place we can ever be equal is under the law. And that's how it should be in a proper country. In any other way, it's completely impossible. So what does the president mean when he means we must all be equal? It's a complete impossible goal. And if it's what we're striving for, then we can use these excuses to push for all kinds of terrible policies, saying we need BE because we need to be equal, but we will never be equal. Also, what does it mean to be transformed? When is the country transformed? I think anybody could agree that South Africa's transformed since 1994. And I know some people disagree, but I think overall for the better since 1994. But so what do you mean by transformation? Does it mean that no white people are in public life anymore? Does it mean every single company must match the national demographics, or whatever the case is? What does transformation mean? It's all these phrases are used to as a fig leaf for all kinds of terrible policies.
Exactly right. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is, I think, just another one of those little stories that says a lot more about the state of things. The water crisis in Joburg continues to cause real problems in many people's lives. In the early hours of Monday morning, there was a fire in Mayfair West in Johannesburg, where a mother and her child died in the fire. A number of people had to be taken to hospital for smoke inhalation. And one of the problems was that when the neighbors attempted to try and fight the fire while waiting for fire services to arrive, there was no water in their taps, because apparently this happens basically every night, that the water runs out at night when the pressure gets low. Now, we don't know for sure whether, you know, people would have been saved or whatever if the water was present, or, you know, maybe if the fire service had been able to get there slightly quicker or whatever. But I think this does speak to a sort of larger problem, which is that this water crisis is seriously destroying Joburg, I think, in a very fundamental way. And it is costing enormous amounts of potential and making people's lives much worse. Your thoughts on this issue, Marius, and maybe what needs to be done to start resolving it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other example, as you mentioned, we can't say for a fact that these people wouldn't have died if there'd been water available. But I think there's probably a good something you could surmise. There clearly wasn't any water. They couldn't do anything about the fire, so there's no way of even trying to douse it in any way. So this is an example where we're seeing service delivery actually literally costing people's lives. And if we don't, and who knows what might start soon happening. We might start having cholera outbreaks if we don't have people being able to get clean water and so on. And, you know, I remember reading an article, even going back, this was just 15, 16 years ago, it stuck with me. And the load shedding had just kind of started. And they said, you know what, if you think load shedding is a problem, wait until you have water shedding. And that's very true. Like, obviously, load shedding is a massive pain in the ass, you know, if you can't do whatever. But if you have the means, you can obviously, get solar panels or even just inverter or whatever. But if you have water issues, that's even a much bigger issue. And that's obviously, these are people who we're living in middle-class suburbs. Obviously, for people living in townships, it's been a problem they've had for years. And it's also telling that we haven't been able to resolve this. And I think something that also makes me think a lot about this kind of stuff is that the Roman Empire managed to have clean water coming into people's homes. This is 2,000 years ago. The Roman Empire managed to get clean water coming into people's homes. The current South African government is not able to do that. And this is 2,000 years later. And somehow this massive feat of engineering is beyond the capabilities of South Africans, even though the Romans, who thought that the earth was flat or whatever, and that, you know, didn't know about how the solar system worked, were able to do it. You know, thought that the sun was actually like a god in a chariot or whatever. It's actually very telling that we can't do this, and the Romans were able to do it.
Oh no, I take your point very well. Your point is very well taken, although just a very small correction. The Romans didn't think the world was flat, but let's not get sidetracked.
No. They probably did think that the sun was a...
Yeah, they managed to create piped water without electricity or, you know, like mechanical machines, which is...
ChatGPT.
Without ChatGPT. It was interesting. So I recently, you know, one of the reasons I moved to Cape Town from Johannesburg was precisely because I suffered a little bit from the water crisis relatively recently, you know, in Joburg. And I thought this is not going to get better anytime soon. The problems are systemic. You know, some of them are failures at national level, not completing the water project in Lesotho. Some of them are provincial. Maybe I don't think Brandwater has done everything it could have. But a lot of them are also municipal problems. Leaks in the taps, failure to, you know, diversion of money through cadres and BE and corruption, all these things away from actually repairing infrastructure. What was interesting when I recently came back to Joburg for a couple of days was just how ubiquitous the water shortages issue was. Almost everyone I talked to from a variety of sort of backgrounds and places they lived in the city explained that they had recently had water issues. Even though, you know, I was on the way to a work function, I was speaking to the Uber driver and I asked him, do you have water? He said he stayed in Cosmo City and he hadn't had water. My relatives don't have water. It is shocking that this, in fact, kind of continues to go on. And I think there should probably be protests in the streets because this is not acceptable. Okay.
But remember, we don't want Telen Zille as the mayor of Joburg because once she sent a bit of a off-color tweet.
Yeah, no. Look, I have a feeling that one of the reasons why even people who don't really like the DA were sort of warm to that idea, people like Adam Hubby, was precisely because, you know, residents of Joburg know that it's time to put away the symbolicness and the nonsense. Even the middle class is, I think, getting hammered by the water crisis.
I think people are also going to start learning that your vote actually means something. Your vote has consequences.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to our last story of today. And this is an interesting story. I'm not sure if we fully understand the implications of it yet. But Vuyo Zongula, who is the founding president of the small ATM party, party that has, I believe, only two seats in parliament, but one that has been surprisingly, I think, sort of been able to punch a little bit above its weight. A little bit of a mysterious party. They've long been accused of being aligned with Jacob Zuma's faction of the ANC or the sort of MK block of our politics. One of their founding members was Jimmy Money, who left the party in 2023. But this party has, I think, often been quite cunning in its deployment of legal resources in the stuff it's pushed in parliament. And it is officially, I guess, if such a thing even still exists, a member of the Progressive Caucus along with the EFF and MK. They recently, however, had a leadership change. Their leader is going to be replaced by a man who holds the position of Chief Apostle of the 12 Apostles Church, I think reflecting the party's sort of deep connection to some of the country's apostolic churches, or messianic churches, rather.
What's the replacement's name, Nick?
The replacement's name is Professor Caesar Nkonganga. Apologies for the butchering of that pronunciation. I think Caesar, speaking of Romans, perhaps maybe we need a Caesar to let's not go down that road either. They called their new leader a, quote, beacon of hope for many. Now, Morris, I don't think we really know what's new on the agenda for the ATM, but they are one of those interesting little players in our politics that I think does have some potential to grow in the next election. What do you make of this?
Yeah, they are quite a strange party. Obviously don't know too much about them, but they, I like looking at by-elections and like local elections. Sometimes, an ATM candidate will do very well in like some random little village in the Eastern Cape or something, So there's definitely something there. I think they've got a couple of provincial legislature seats. And I think that's a very big untapped market in South Africa, political market. We all know that now polling says the same thing, that South Africans are actually pretty conservative, and a lot of them are quite religious, and obviously Christianity is the single biggest religion in South Africa. And I think if we get down to denominations and the way people worship, I think these kind of charismatic messianic churches are probably, they're probably much bigger than, the kind of traditional churches, your Catholic church or your normal Methodist church or whatever. So I think if there's a market that can be tapped into, and I think they're also quite they're pretty hard to say whether they're right-wing or left-wing. I think socially they're pretty right-wing. Economically they're pretty left-wing. So, and I think that's actually a kind of a mix that's becoming more common around the world, not just in South Africa. I think a lot of people, in a lot of countries, there's parties, they kind of appeal to people who, as I say, are a bit socially more conservative and more left-wing. When it comes to economics, they don't really mind things like redistribution and so on, as we were talking about. As I was saying before the show, even Donald Trump has a kind of elements of that, and some people voted for him would probably fall under that. We're being, kind of suspicion of big business and so on, but being pretty conservative when it comes to social issues. So anyway, yeah, so I think the ATM has definitely got some potential. And something to watch, but we've seen like these kind of infighting in small parties often destroys them. And it's fighting is often the bitterest when there's not that much at stake. And maybe this is one of those issues where there's only two MP seats. Always like two bald men fighting over a comb. That's always the most then the fighting can be very bitter. But we'll see what happens. Yeah, I think it's definitely a party to watch, and it's definitely got a foundation, I think, to maybe make an impact in South African politics. But yeah, it's I just think it's something to keep an eye on for now.
They are an interesting sort of potential, as you say, for what they could represent in our politics. Not saying that I think that they are a particularly positive influence, because they do have tended to have a pretty strong alignment with the kind of MK side of our politics, but still. It will be interesting to see whether they get absorbed by MK or whether they are able to chart their own course in the next local government election. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.